Thank you, Nancy. With great pleasure, may I present to you our second speaker, Bob E. from Beverly Hills.
I am Bob Earl. I'm a drug addict and alcoholic. It's nice to see that nothing has changed over the years in AA conventions, right? Give the kids the small room because nobody goes to their meetings. I'm glad to be here. I'm thrilled to death to be here. I'm 44 fucking years old, you know. I almost fell over when they asked me, you know. So don't feel bad about being older than Connie, right? You know. I said, you sure? You know, you want me? Because I remember I'm from the young people when we didn't allow anybody over 40 to even get to the podium. You know, I mean, it's like, no, I don't want to hear none of them. They might give us some information. Now I'm one of them. I want you to know, if you're out there and you're 20, in your early 20s, and you know you got a year or two of sobriety, or a day, or a week, or whatever, you can, if you choose. I mean, this is under the assumption you drank at home and never got in contact with any law enforcement agencies. But I believe that if you desire, you could become president of the United States of America. Okay, now that's after 17 years of living this program. in interesting ways. I was thinking this morning, you know, 44 years old and almost 18 years clean and sober, and it's as exciting today as it was when it's brand new. A little less hostility and a little less tense, possibly, but it's as exciting. I mean, Alcoholics Anonymous is an absolutely incredible thing. A lot of things don't change. I mean, I love what you said. It takes a long time to grow, man. Jesus, God. You know, I mean, I'm just learning how to be a good partner in a relationship, you know. Got sobriety down. Now I'll try a couple of other things. But I'll look into employment when I'm 50, you know, see if I can't... give me 20 years. I can still retire when I'm 70, you know. That's cool. And I am one of these that believe that we're not all here, or at least I'm not all here, and anybody I choose to associate with is a close friend of mine in Alcoholics Anonymous that I've known for any period of time, who I love dearly, is nuttier than a fruitcake. And because it just seems that a lot of feelings after you've been sober a little while that you ran away from all your life start to surface. And I know one of the things that scares me more than anything else in the program is you go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, watch them take birthday cakes. There'll be five people taking a one-year cake, and three taking a two-year cake, and four taking a three-year cake, and one four, and one five, and then it ain't nobody till you get to 9 or 10. What the hell happened to all them in between? Where did they go? Where are those people from 5 years to 9 years to 10 years? And the only thing I can figure out is they ain't here. You know. Probably took me a month to work that one out. Just nothing changed this morning. You know, the earliest morning is a knock on the door of the room and having a wonderful attitude about life first thing in the morning. My girlfriend and I looked at each other and said, oh, God, it's probably some AA wants fucking help or something, right? I mean, start your day immediately willing to give, God's will, right? So I sent her to the door. You know, I'm not too courageous in the first thing in the morning. And it was a really gorgeous basket of fruit, okay, from the committee, which, by the way, is a committee member here. Thank you very much. And when I get done, and it was nice. I mean, it was really nice, thoughtful to send a large basket of fruit. And when I'm done with my talk, you will know that they should have sent me the fruit and nuts in a paper bag and some straw so I could have weaved my own basket. Back to what happened with the people with more than 5 years. The only thing I can see is that in the beginning, you're really busy trying to not drink and not use. I mean, that's it. I mean, that occupies a lot of time. Just trying to keep enough of the pieces together that you don't use any narcotics or drink any alcohol today. It's like you might go to 9 meetings that day. Screw that week, that day. You know, you might be on the phone for a total of 20 hours out of the 24 when you're in the meetings. You know, you do a lot of, you expend a lot of energy in the beginning not consuming alcohol and drugs. I mean, it's like, you know. And it's like I was laying here today, this morning, before coming to the convention. I thought it's so nice to be laid back now. Because I remember when I was new, I was 26 too, and I'd go to a convention, I wouldn't sleep for 3 days. You know, it's like you're, you can't get enough of anything. It's just go, you know, it's like all this energy because it's like you don't have those chemicals that were making things quiet. You know. Granted, the only thing you could see was the hairs on your chest, not the girls, of course, but you know. So you expend this energy in not using these chemicals, and after a while, you're going to discover a very interesting thing around here. Sobriety becomes a habit. Not drinking and not using becomes a habit, just like drinking and using became a habit. It reaches a point where you hit an emotional crunch in your life. The first thing you think of anymore is not drinking or using. It doesn't even enter your mind. No matter what a disaster it is, there's a point in your sobriety that's no longer an alternative. You have removed that from your life. I think we must remove two alternatives here. Drinking and using and suicide. If you're new and you've never thought of suicide, stay sober for a while.
You will consider it.
You'll go from suicide to homicide depending on the circumstances and how much self-worth you have in that split second. If you have a little bit, you want to kill them. You got none, you want to kill you. You know, it's so it seems like once suddenly sobriety has become a habit, you don't have to put all that energy out anymore. Now start coming to the feelings, to the surface, feelings. Inadequacy, fear. Suddenly you realize, I spent my whole life thinking I didn't care what anybody thought. Spent 5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous thinking I didn't care what anybody thought. Yeah, screw you. Right? Who cares? And suddenly you find out you care what people think. And what the hell do I do now? I mean, they tell me not to do nothing to make them like me, but I want them to like me. But I don't want to do what they want me to do to make them like me. So you can spend 4 days at home on that one, you know. Thinking is probably the most dangerous thing you can do in sobriety. That and being home alone. Those two will can finish you. As a thing in one of Emmett Fox's books, which is really great. It's a super analogy. It's a story out of the West somewhere about these guys left their campsite and they had this big kettle of boiling water on the fire. And this grizzly bear wanders into the camp and he looks at this kettle dancing on the fire, right, and walks over and picks it up. And it burns them. Well, the grizzly bear grabs it tighter because the only defense the grizzly has is this immense strength that it uses. So instinctively, it pulls the kettle tighter. And the tighter it pulls the kettle, the more the kettle burns the bear. And the more it burns the bear, the tighter the bear pulls the kettle. Okay? Until the bear is finished. Right? And he says, you know, we do that with our problem. You know, we get a little problem going, man, and we just grab hold of it and pull it in. You know, right? Yeah, somebody's got one going. Just said, oh, Jesus. Came to the meeting clutching a turd. Yeah. And we just pull that sucker in and just keep pulling it in and pulling it in, and the more it hurts, the more we think about it. And we don't want any outside interference either. Don't be calling me, offering me help. You know. Don't fix me. You know. And that's why, that's because I believe this thing doesn't work well. I don't have a lot of healthy respect for my mind. It has not done me any just really gigantic favors over the years since I've been sober. It has 100% track record of being wrong and lying to me. And yet I've spent thousands of hours listening to it. Intently. Yeah. And one of the things I realized about my mind, once I no longer had to put my energy into staying sober, and this thing started to think, is one of the things it spends a lot of time doing is getting ready. It's like my mind is always wants to be prepared for what's coming. Now, the only way it can be prepared for what's coming is to tell me what's coming. Now, I don't know how the hell it knows that, right? You know. It took me about 14 years to snap to the fact that it never is getting me ready for anything good. I wake up in the morning, it never says to me, hey, there's a terrific job you're going to get today. And it's going to pay you more money than you ever got before in your life, and we better figure out a couple of banks to put it in and some of the nice things we're going to buy. My mind wakes me up and says, they're going to fire your ass today. You got about enough money to last you 3 weeks, they're going to throw you in the street, and that lump on your knee is probably bone cancer, and you're dying. Now you know why I sent my girlfriend to the door. You know, I've already got enough bad information. I don't need any more from outside sources, for Christ's sake. You know, don't help me. You know, to defeat this thing seems to be one of the goals of sobriety for me, to find a way to wrest my life out of the control of my mind. It seems that it requires a power to do that. You guys can't do it. I was spent 5 years around here waiting for you to do it. You know, you didn't do it. I wound up not here in a fruitcake 5 years clean and sober because you guys didn't do it. I wanted you to fix it. And you don't think any better than I think, but I didn't know that, you know. Oh, we have a few great pretenders at meetings, you know, but... When somebody's too mellow, somebody comes up to me and they're really mellow, I sort of turn them around the light to watch the pupils, see if they change. Because, you know, there's a lot of tension in sobriety. The only reason there's a lot of tension in sobriety is because you do a lot of thinking in sobriety. I read a line in a book the other day, absolutely floored me. It said there are only two emotions you can spend a day with. Two. Take your pick. One of two emotions you can spend the rest of this day with. Love or fear. That's it. There's nothing else. Huh? Watch your mind come to a stop on that one. Because if that's true, there's nothing for it to do. What the hell is there for this thing to do if there's just two simple emotions that you can spend a day with? So why the hell, you know, I mean, people walk around here, it's like one of the things we try and do in Alcoholics Anonymous is pretend we're well. Right? You come in here and it's almost like the group conscience says, at 1 year you should have accomplished this, at 2 you should accomplish that, at 3 this, 4 that, 5 that, and at 5 everybody leaves because nobody's made it. You know? They take their 5-year inventory and say, holy Christ, you know, I'm 4 years and 11 months behind, man. I mean, now I realize some of you came in here, fell in love with AA, and everything has been super ever since.
for all me that I was not without knowing it was Mr. Enoch Dixon, this old butcher, that is lunch. Fine, sir. There is still gasoline.
I'm not particularly fond of anything about alcoholics, none. I don't know if we're the chosen children. I wouldn't really want to make that observation or not, but I believe we're awful lucky. And the reason I'm lucky is because I am so goddamn stark raving Looney Tunes that if I don't seek God, I'll die. It's that simple. Now, the guy who lives next door to me, you know, he relies on First National Bank and American Express. They don't do nothing for this. You know, just keeps working, you know. So I am driven to seek a power greater than myself. The irony in that is it says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous very plainly, never hear it quoted, it means fascinating. The main purpose of this book, the main object of this book is to help us find a power greater than ourselves. That's what the book says. Does it say it's to keep you sober? Does it say it's to find you an old lady? Does it say it's to find you a job? Does it say nothing? It says very clearly, simply, spell out, the main object of this book is to help you find a power greater than yourself. Which means if you are not actively seeking God at this moment, whatever you're involved in is bullshit.
Silence. Right.
Mine can't handle that. What do you mean, seek God? God damn it, we got to get ready for Monday. I mean, I'd like to take time to enjoy the convention, but doesn't anybody know Monday's coming, for Christ's sake? Let's get ready for Monday. I mean, you may get in touch with the fact in this program that you are 1,000 times more frightened than you ever thought you were. And you're 1,000 more times inadequate than you ever thought you were. And if you're just really honest to God, don't know if you can make it or if there's anything for you to believe in. And if there's anything to believe in, you look around and you see that people are staying sober. And there are some days that may be the only thing you accomplish that day. There may be days, man, when your best shot is to not drink and use on that day, and that better be okay. Better be okay, because that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. I don't know how many people come to this convention, but, you know, you figure probably a couple thousand, I guess. I don't know how many. Anybody know? A lot of ribbons up here. Nobody knows how many people? See? Half minds are thinking, I don't know how many people, you know. See, it likes to be prepared, you know. Obviously, nobody knew I'd ask that question until they weren't ready. But I wonder how many people are here. But they're clean and sober. That's the miracle. See, if you don't have the sobriety, you got nothing. That's my belief. You got to have the sobriety first. The sobriety must come first. Once sobriety becomes a habit, then I believe there's nothing else but spirituality. That's next. Now, what I believe and what I'm capable of doing are two different things. Okay? What I believe and what I'm capable of doing are two different things. I really believe that. I, honest to God, as I stand here right now, after the experience I have had drinking and using and in sobriety, I believe there is nothing else but that, yes, seeking God is what it's all about. Because God has the power I need in order to make it. See, I can't make it without God. I was ready to die 5 years clean and sober. Absolutely ready to die. Because I had done this program as good as I could do it. I was talking with a couple of guys before me who had been on a whole motorcycle trip from Seattle into Mexico and back and around. And I said, far out, man. You know, I mean, it's like, they're out there having a good time. And have you noticed how your mind doesn't want you to have a good time? It never wants to go anywhere that might be fun. You know, and if you have never been there before or done it before, watch the mind find reasons not to go. I'd like to go to the dance, but I don't feel well. I have other things to do, whatever it may be. It's like we come in here and we think, the mind is interesting. When you're drinking and using, it takes and creates situations and circumstances that get you gunned down in the street. And and then you come into Alcoholics Anonymous and it does the same thing with you. It takes and creates circumstances so that you get gunned down in meetings, you know. only by yourself. Because what it does is it takes this program and says, okay, now you got the tools. Shape up. Now you better become what it is they wanted you to become that you couldn't become. You know? I mean, if there's one line the alcoholic probably gets sicker of hearing than anything else in the world is, oh, God damn it, can't you do it better? I know you can do it better. Bullshit. If I could do it better, I would do it better. You know? That's a mind game, man. You play it with yourself and other people. You look at the other guy and says, well, if he was working his program, he'd be okay, but he's not. He can do a better job. Wait. Sitting in judgments like that will kill you. Tomorrow it'll be your turn. 30 people at the meeting will be saying, well, if you were working your program, you wouldn't be sitting here on the floor in tears, goddammit, you know. And we guys, we never sit on the floor in tears at meetings, right? We got to be cool. We bring that bullshit in here, too, right? Well, we'll be cool, you know. You ever watch an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting? Nobody admits that they hurt. Nobody admits they're dying, scared to death, mentally ill. My girl was talking to one of her babies yesterday on the phone. The baby was chewing on the receiver. She told her she was mentally ill. She got angry.
Me? Not me.
Why the hell does the second step pertain to insanity? I mean, you know, those old guys must have known something and we refuse to learn from it. They say very clearly, you know, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity, which must mean there's a problem that arises when we quit using the chemical. That is because if you truly surrender, there's nothing for you to do. What you need, what is yours, what is on the spiritual path that belongs to you, for you to use, will be put in front of you. Right in front of you. Those doors that are to open in your life will open as if by magic in a haunted house. You don't have to beat them down, hammer them down, con them open, maneuver them open. Nothing, man. They'll open by themselves. Okay? The people that are supposed to be in our lives will be brought in when they're supposed to be there and taken out when it's no longer time for them to be there. Our pain comes from trying to drag them in early and unwilling to let them out when it's time for them to go. You know. And we don't ever take what's put in front of us. God will place a gorgeous lady in front of us who's mellow and has got things to teach us and maybe isn't so impressed with us, right? You know, my lady isn't impressed with me. It's a pain in the ass. You know, it's hard when the lady you're with isn't impressed with you. You've got to do something, you know, other than just stand there. You know. But we won't take what's in front of us because this thing wants to do something else. You get a girl in your life who's really warm and loving and wonderful and kind and sweet, and you'll say, what about the redhead over there, though? You know. God, yeah, well, I can see the broken glass and hot coals, but screw that. You know. I mean, if God really loves me, she's meant to be mine, and I won't bleed or burn my feet on my way, you know. And when you're halfway there and your feet are burned and you're bleeding, you say, well, I'm just putting too much pressure on my feet. It'll be okay, you know. The head can keep you locked into an obsession like you got blinders. First, it puts it there, and then just so you can't see anything else, it gets you, you know. It's so great what it says in the book that, you know, it's all we ever get involved with really are self-centered fears. Nobody wants to look at that. We don't want to look at that. We want to be a nice guy. I want to be a nice guy. I don't want to be a self-centered asshole, for Christ's sake. I don't want to be petty, small-minded, belligerent, scared. You know, I had the best experience of my life about 3 weeks ago. I started a yoga class, okay? Now, for an old jailhouse weightlifter, number one, that's a big thing going to a yoga class, right? I mean, you almost wonder, do I take a sheet, you know, I mean, what do I do?
It does. All right. Halfway through this class, I'm standing there in just a pair of shorts looking in this whole wall of mirrors. And I realize I have successfully not looked at myself for years, right? I look in the mirror, and looking back at me is this guy, and he's definitely 44 years old. Okay? And because he had a rotten attitude when he was in the streets drinking and using and has taken a few bullets and a few other things, his body isn't straight. One leg shorter than the other, the neck's a little crooked, back's crooked, shoulders are different size, and it sort of leans to one side. On top of that, he's got this little roll of fat around the middle that hangs over the edge of the swing trunk. So I'm standing there 17 years sober looking in the mirror. My mind is saying to me the kind of thing you can do, shoot the son of a bitch. You know. Take him out of his misery, man, you know. But after 17 years of this way of life, and because I'm nuts, and because of my insanity, I'm driven to seek God, another voice says, God loves him. He's okay. That's the one thing I never was okay. I was never okay with anybody. I was never okay with my family. I was never okay with institutions. I was always a problem. Nobody ever loved me. You know, a lot of most people didn't even like me. Doesn't change when you get sober either. It's hard, you know, because it's mind. It's like if you're 3 or 4 years sober and crazier than you've ever been. I mean, I know this is going to sound like insanity, but thank God, because that's the only thing that's going to get you to seek him. That's the only thing that's going to get you to look for God. And some of you are going to be sitting out there going, Jesus Christ, that son of a bitch is a minister and he's off hours. Not with my mouth. That's another thing. I love all the uproar about language and Alcoholics Anonymous. It's hilarious. Mental bullshit, man. It's, you know, nitpicking with words. But what's a word? Tell me. You know, somebody says, fuck at the podium, and everybody goes, nuts. Yeah. My God. You hear him? I don't know what your short form of serenity prayer is, sucker, but I know what mine is. When I'm crawling across the living room floor, dragging myself through the carpet by my fingernails in the worst emotional pain of my life because I've done everything I can do and I still don't have whatever it is I want, I don't say thy will be done. Your mind nitpicks with words. Not your heart. Not your heart. Your heart does not care. Remember this, guys, because, you know, I'm not saying anything except that you can close out people who have valuable things to say from their heart because you choose to listen with your mind. See, you want to categorize what they say and analyze what they say and compartmentize what they say. You know, put their talk in neat little compartments. See? While we who are up here talking, you know, right? I mean, I don't know what compartment it goes in, you know. It's like, oh, never mind. They're talking now. I can get through about the first 25 minutes and then they start talking, you know. It's like, Talk about the power of God, you might cry and look really foolish. Talk about the blessings that have come into your life in sobriety, you'll get emotional. You don't want to do that. We'll look ridiculous. Anything the head can't stand is to look ridiculous. That's why it spends all its time getting ready. Never wants to get caught off guard in any situation. Never. You ever notice it don't want to go around corners it's never been around before? I say this to everybody. Nobody believes me. You don't think your mind's got control of your ass? Take a different route to work Monday. I'm deadly serious. I've never been more serious in my life. Get in your car Monday morning and go a brand new way, some way you've never gone before. Can you hear your head telling you right now why you can't do it? Can't do that. I mean, I can't. There's no on-ramp there. I mean, we can't get on. I mean, I can't, you know, I mean, can't make a left turn. Should I have to go all the way down? Oh, no, man, we can't, you know. Why would this marvelous piece of machinery, your mind, resist?
Talk about the power of God, you might cry and look really foolish. Talk about the blessings that have come into your life in sobriety, you'll get emotional. You don't want to do that. We'll look ridiculous. Anything your head can't stand, it'll look ridiculous. That's why it spends all the time getting ready. Never wants to get caught off guard in any situation. Never. Never knows that don't want to go around corners that's never been around before. I say this to everybody. Nobody believes me. You don't think your mind's got control of your ass? Take a different route to work Monday. I'm deadly serious. I've never been more serious in my life. Get in your car Monday morning and go a brand new way, some way you've never gone before. Can you hear your head telling you right now why you can't do it? Can't do that. I mean, I can't. There's no on-ramp there. I mean, we can't get on. I mean, you can't, you know, I mean, can't make a left turn. Should I have to go all the way down? Oh, no, man, we can't, you know. Why would this marvelous piece of machinery, your mind, resist something as simple as a new route to work? Because if you take a new route, it can't think. It's got to pay attention to where you're going. It loves to think. What put me in touch with that is I realized finally I've got up in the morning, go out, get in my car, and from then until I get out of it where I work, it's a total blank. You know, 15 minutes of life has gone by and I missed it all because I was getting ready for thinking at work, you know. I laugh about it and I kid about it and I have a lot of fun with it, but the only pain you're going to suffer in sobriety is going to come from your mind. Ain't nobody else gonna do it to you. Nobody else hates you that bad. They may dislike you. They may not even want you in the neighborhood, but they don't want to cut you up in little pieces and flush you down the toilet, you know. I mean, do you ever notice how hard it is for all... Think about yourself and your friends, and I'm not trying to put any pressure on anybody about anything, but how hard it is for us to do anything that's good for us. Anything that's nice for ourselves? I mean, you know, all the evidence in the world is in that says smoking will kill you. I went to an AA meeting at Cedar of City of Hope Hospital. I mean, they hold an AA meeting in the auditorium, not for patients, for people who live in the area. I guess patients, too. Everybody's smoking. The dead center of the cancer capital of the world, man. And the alcoholics, myself included, I was the speaker, you know. Yeah. And I'm standing there looking at this group, I said, something's wrong. You know? I mean, we're all sitting here smoking, and everybody around us is dying from smoking. You know? Why? Why the hell do we do that to ourselves? You know, I don't even know, screw it, I don't know, it's got nothing to do with smoking. I'll tell you what got my attention for those of you who are smoking. Now, this is not Smokers Anonymous for those of you who just arrived. And I smoked for 15 years of sobriety. One day I was doing some research on a project with the people of suicide prevention and I found out they considered smoking covert suicide. I said, holy Christ. Each puff, they figure, you're just killing yourself. Okay, my God. And you're not going to want to hear these things. It's a part of you that's just going to go, oh, talk about booze. I'm not drinking it. You know, screw the cigarettes. I mean, I need the cigarettes. Then how come a lot of us don't smoke? If you need... Why am I not smoking? I guess my head would rather talk about that than God. Screw God. Let's talk about cigarettes, man. We won't, you know... When I was... Well, I was about... It's, shut up. One of you guys make up your mind, will you?
tell you what, if you wanna save yourself for some time in the middle of the night and you wanna not take yourself so seriously,
let me tell you how to do it.
Because my head would always pick the middle of the night for the real emotional anxiety attacks. Because it knew I was too cool to call anybody.
I wouldn't wake anybody up.
Wake someone up and tell them that I can't do it? That I somehow have fun? I mean, we don't even come into meetings honestly and say, I'm dying. Jesus God, I hurt. I can't take any more. You know, walk in a meeting, your old lady's just divorced you, you know, your car was repoed, you lost your job, a couple friends walk up and say, hey, how you doing, Bob? No, not bad, man, can't complain, you know, it's cool. Yeah. 6 months later, you'll come back to the meeting and tell them how you fixed it. Well, 6 months ago, I wasn't in a very good place. You know, I had these two or three problems in my life, but I worked it out, right? Instead of just going, aah! Anyhow, my mind would always go, aah! In the middle of the night because it knew I wouldn't call anybody and ask for help, see? So being nuts can save your life around here, too, because you'll do things other people won't do. Those who are weller than those who of us who are nuts, they have to even be cool when they're home alone by themselves. That's a sneaky one. I know it takes a while. You realize, God, I do that, don't I? I mean, you're not even free to be free in your own company. Now, that should let you know somebody else is present. And they're not a friend. Because you're always on guard, even when you're home alone. Anyhow, one night in the middle of the night, I was in one of those great places where I wasn't getting anything I wanted, and I was losing everything that I thought I had to have. And I could see no solutions to any of it, and I didn't know what to do. And being nuts, one of the voices said to me, look, they always tell you in AA, when you have a major problem, go to a meeting. Why don't you have a meeting? And I said, terrific idea. So I took all my chairs in my house, and I put them in a circle. I got out the big book, sat down in the leader's chair. Designated this guy over here to read chapter 5, got up, moved over to that chair, sat down and read chapter 5. Did the whole thing. Read chapter 3, traditions, moved chair to chair. And as long as you're dying because of some emotional problem, the logical thing is to have a discussion meeting, right? Topics should be the problem that's killing you. Okay? So I picked the topic that was killing me and I began to move from chair to chair and discuss this problem that was killing me. And about a half hour into my discussion meeting at home alone by myself, I wound up in a screaming argument. Suddenly, when the awareness comes that you are actually honest to God, willing to die for both ends of the issue, you can no longer take yourself so seriously. Something says, there must be another way here. Must be something else I can do besides this thinking business, you know. I have come in a program of Alcoholics Anonymous through pain to believe in a God that is love, nothing but love, all love, everywhere, all the time, all powerful, all present. Nothing I can do can change him, fix him, or affect him. Nothing. Somebody said to me one time years ago, it took me a long time to understand. They said, when you finally come to accept and understand that God loved you as much when you were holding a gun at a man's head, as he loves you today when you stick out your hand to the newcomer, then and only then will you understand God. That's inconceivable. I mean, that's absolutely, totally inconceivable. How can that be? How can I be out there bringing bodily harm to people, taking their money, taking everything, and he loved me? And then I come in here in AA and I hope a newcomer and he loves me the same. I can't, my mind cannot accept that, thank God. Anything it can accept means trouble for me. You see, my mind wants logic. My mind demands logic. My mind demands that things make sense to it. true how I feel in my heart and my stomach. It wants things to make sense to it. We know you're double over in pain, but ignore it. This is what you must do. Everything spiritual is illogical. Nothing good has come into your life from God and been placed in front of you in the manner in which you thought it was going to come. Nor did it come from the source you thought it was going to come from. Nor was the solution what you thought it would be. It's always the other person. It came from the other direction, and you never believed that that could happen. I love the thing when people say coincidences are small miracles where God is too busy to take a bow. You know, we are truly being held in the hands of loving God, protected and looked after, if we will allow it. Whew. Heavy, if we will allow it. See? But you can't think and allow it at the same time. That's true. Because your head is always busy doing anything but God. And when you start to work on getting next to God, when you start a little prayer in AA and a little meditation in AA, when you start to realize you've worked all the steps 412 times, you've been to 10,000 meetings and you're crazier than a loon, okay, you got 100 babies, everything's cool except you're going under, you know. Start saying, God, I think I'll look into the spiritual aspect of this program here. What the hell is that step? 11, was it? Or 3 or something. I remember something in there, you know. And then you begin to turn slowly to God. Man, you know, it's like you want to have a magic wand so you can just reach out and hit people, touch people gently in the head with it and say, here is the answer to all of your problems. Here is the solution to all of your problems. The answer is but one answer, and it is God. Okay? The first 4 years I was sober, and I had some friends here who know me from the beginning. I saw Mary in the back. Eddie used to be one of my sponsors. Fired him. It's like they know me really well. And the first 4 years I was clean and sober, I did it as good as I knew how to do it, man. I never said no to an AA request. Never said no to an obsession either, but I never said no. I never said no to an AA request, no matter what it was, man. Whether it was speak, pick up newcomers, go to institutions, make coffee, be a secretary of the meeting, be a treasurer. Get in trouble being a treasurer. Watch that crap in the beginning. Easy Monday. And with God's sense of humor, they'll find out it's gone. Then you'll be publicly embarrassed. It's wonderful, let me tell you, God. It's the last time you ever hit the till. When you found out, Jesus, that's embarrassing. Anyhow, onward. I did it all, and I also out there in the work world was trying to do the best job I could. I wanted to be a good credit application. Yeah, I wanted to be a good citizen. I wanted to be, damn it, all those things I never ever was able to be, no matter how hard I tried. I couldn't be kind to people, couldn't be nice to people, couldn't be loving to people, couldn't be responsible, couldn't hold a job, couldn't have a nice attitude about anything, just sit and hate. You know, that seemed to be about the full extent of my real ability. Sit and hate. And so in this first 4 years, man, although I was angry all of the time, I worked all of the time. I gave living out there and sobriety my best shot. Okay? I couldn't do it any better. Swear to God. Put a gun to my head. I couldn't have done the first 4 years any better. I don't know anybody that could. And yet on my fourth birthday in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was going financially bankrupt through the courts. My car had been repossessed. I didn't have a girlfriend anywhere in sight in my life. I was sleeping on the couch of a guy in AA I didn't even particularly like. I was working in a car wash for $1.25 an hour, and I had already been humiliated there because I started at $1.35, and I... working in soap, and I got a goddamn rash from the detergents and had to be moved to the drive-off end, right? I wasn't going to take a fourth birthday cake. In fact, I didn't. The only one I took was the Glendale Sanitarium, right? Went to the funny house to take a birthday cake. 4 years sober. What was I going to do at an AA meeting? Because I was caught up in this bullshit here that I got something to prove in AA. I couldn't take a fourth cake. Admit to you that I was bankrupt, didn't have an automobile. I was borrowing money from my babies, that I had a rash on my arms, that I was working in a car wash, that I was a total failure. Absolute, total, complete failure. Okay, went on one more year like that.
Don't surrender, you know, God, don't give up, not then.
That's bad, but, you know, there's a little more. You can hang on for a couple of more miles in there, you know. And all that sounds bad to you. Wait, I went another year, and all I got was a better job, you know. Still no car, no nothing. Just kept going, kept dying, kept trying to do this thing. Kept being embarrassed, humiliated by 12-step calls in central office because the guy had to be sober and have a car for me to make the 12-step call because he had to pick me up, right? You know. 4.5 years sober, I can't even go get a new guy, right? You know, and I'm trying to figure out what's wrong, what happened, what the hell is it? I did it as good as I could do it. I did it, the thinking, the planning, the maneuvering, the minute. I know what's good for me. Ask me, goddammit. I put all my energies into getting what's good for me. I figured out what's right for me. I haven't never worked harder in my life, man, to get what was right for me. And it wasn't the car wash, was not what I had in mind. You know, not having a car, 5 years sober, was not what I had in mind. You know. It just wasn't exactly what I had in mind. So when I was about a month away from my fifth birthday in Alcoholics Anonymous, it was absolutely, totally bonkers, not knowing where to turn, one night sitting home alone, quietly thinking, I didn't know where to turn, man. I'd done it all as good as I could do it and did not know where to turn. I had gone through sponsors, gone through meetings, gone through institutions, gone through babies, gone through girlfriends, gone through everything, and didn't know what to do. And in a moment of absolute, total, complete desperation, because then and only then, I looked at the ceiling in my room and I screamed to God, I said, if you're not there, I'm fucked. Because if there was no God, I was going to die. I'd done it, baby. I had given AA, sobriety, life, responsibility, employment, everything in the world, the best shot I knew how to give it. That's it. And my mind always knows what's good for me, right? Don't ever let it interpret nothing. Just shut it up. I went to work the next day, placed a brand new Allen head wrench and a brand new Allen head bolt that slipped. I went backwards against one of the furnaces and crushed two vertebrae in my back. Half hour later, I'm laying in the emergency hospital in Van Nuys, and my mind is saying to me, see, you dumb son of a bitch, you surrendered last night, today you broke your back. I told you he was waiting for you. I don't listen to the voices that come from here down anymore. I try and listen to the ones that come from down here up, and there's a difference, and you will come to know it in time, in sobriety. Suddenly a voice from down here came up and screamed at me, why don't you just shut up?
I thought, oh, God, I think I will. You know, I'm really tired, man.
You know, I'd run out of plans, man. You know. My Boy Scout match knife was dull and my matches were wet, man. It was just, you know, no more.
So I decided I would do, the only thing I could do was do what was put in front of me. Okay?
I mean, I had nothing left, man. Total defeat. I went and applied for vocational rehabilitation and disability insurance. That's the end. Done what I can do. Now I start going to vocational rehab, which was a humiliating experience. I have 10th grade education. I can't spell. I'm a phonetic speller. My handwriting, you can barely read it. And I have no trade, no profession, nothing. I mean, they were, you know, Kevin, they gave me 5 aptitude tests. They gave out 5 different things, you know.
It's hard for them to place you when you go all the way from concert pianist to forest ranger, you know.
God even knows how to use bureaucracy against itself. They had me on their caseload for 6 months, man. Couldn't figure out what the hell to do with me because I kept explaining to them you can't take the pianist and stick them in the forest because, you know, got a problem, right? After 6 months, I'm the only caseload they got left from June.
Okay, I'm the only one left. They don't know what the hell to do with me because what do you do with me? I'm not, you know, I'm a little Looney Tunes. I've got nothing to work with. Nothing. I mean, you know, I'm clean and sober. That's it. So one day I'm looking in the television guide and there's a thing that says, do you want to be a writer? And somebody said, why not try that? I said, Jesus, right? That's illogical. I mean, if you have a 10th grade education, you can't spell, you've failed English ever since the 4th grade. I mean, there's not a lot going in, you know, to make you want to leap up and go attack this profession. But something in me said, just take the thing right to the lady. So I go down to vocational rehab, and I take the thing to the lady, and I said, I think I'd like to try this and be a writer. Well, this broad laughed so hard, man, she almost fell out of her wheelchair, you know. But she took it into her boss, and they needed to get me off the books, right? They would have gone for anything to get me off the books. I love God. He knows how to handle all that bullshit, right? You know? They said, yeah, terrific, go. We'll pay for it. Okay? I don't know nothing about nothing. All I know is I sat down, began to write a story for television. Eskimo number one showed up, gave me a little hand with it. The girl who typed it was on the program, happened to work for the show I was writing for. I turned it in. This is the guy who can't spell, has no education, failed English ever since the 4th grade. They bought it. They bought it. I said, God damn. Right? You know, I didn't do anything. I mean, I didn't plan it. I didn't figure it. I didn't arrange it. Nothing I ever had in my mind. I mean, I didn't, you know, I mean, what do I do now? What the hell do I do now? I have a friend that says when she finally came to accept the fact that her own life was none of her business, it got good. I believe that. I believe that. Today I'm still writing. You know, it's 12 years later now, man. That's my profession. That's what I do for a living. You know what? Above and beyond all that, I'm respected. They pay me a hell of a lot of money to do what I do. I work for an organization that's in love with me. I don't know if I'm in love with them, but they're in love with me. I was going to quit, and I had a friend of mine say to me, yeah, don't let them make a success out of you. Fuck them. I started thinking. Took me 12 years of writing, then I started thinking, well, now I know what we'll do here now. I'll make some plans, you know. It's like, it is so hard because you got to get past your mind to accept the fact that there is a power that loves you and a power that will take care of you. But the beautiful part of that is all I ever wanted ever in my life, man, is for somebody, please fucking take care of me. I don't care what I was doing. I don't care how bad I looked. I don't care if I was standing in your store, man, looking totally goddamn stark raving mad with hair going in 100 directions with a 14-inch shotgun resting on your nose. All I wanted was somebody to take care of me. See? That's why we're misunderstood as an alcoholic. And I looked to men to take care of me, and I looked to money to take care of me, and I looked to credit cards to take care of me, I looked to guns to take care of me, and alcohol and narcotics, and I looked to women to take care of me. Somebody please take me home and take care of me. But everything let me down, man. The drugs let me down, the alcohol let me down, the weapons let me down, the women let me down, the people let me down, everything let me down. They got to. Because they're standing right there looking you dead in the eyes, waiting for you to take care of them. And the humorous thing is we miss all that, and yet we're in the only organization in the world where God has proven we can take care of each other if we allow Him to do it through us. If we allow Him to do it through us. My life today, and man, for those of you, you know, for everybody here, but particularly for the young people, let me tell you, this is like, regardless of what this thing says to you, this is where it's at. This is it. I guarantee it. Because I know other people. I have watched other people surrender. I have watched babies of mine, man, who can't fucking add two and two who are mathematicians today. Right? I know guys who can't drive a nail straight, man, who are building houses, and they're contractors, and the money's coming in, and they're building their own homes for their wives and their children, and they're coming alive, and they're participating, and they ain't got a goddamn thing to do with it. What happened to them? They got scared to death in sobriety. Screw drinking and using. They got scared to death in sobriety, and they said, God, please take care of me. And he will.
And I love you.
God bless you.